If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
This whole world of equity raising is a very disparate world. Everyone kind of just gets into it and like they want to do it. And I recently came across that phrase, fund to funds. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, oh, that's what I'm doing. Right. Okay.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dovid Prale is a capital intermediary specializing in helping small investors, check sizes of 10 grand to 200 grand, invest in quality multifamily and commercial real estate. He is also the host of the Think Wealthy podcast, the only five-minute financial education podcast. Dovid, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
This is great, man. This is great. Now, you are my first transatlantic podcast guest. That's this is tons of fun. Where are you right now? Tell our listeners where you're based out of.
About 10 minutes outside of Jerusalem in Israel.
In Israel, 10 minutes outside of Jerusalem. And yet you have found a way to invest in real estate in the United States.
Well, yeah, that's one of the best places to be right now. So make it work.
Make it work. I love that. Can you give the same questions I ask everybody who comes on? Can you give us a brief overview of where you started? Where are you now and how you got there?
I started in residential mortgages in Israel. Through that, I saw that there were a lot of people here who had a need to have a safe place to invest their money that could grow. Income here is a challenge. Housing cost here is very high. A lot of people who had anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000 wouldn't qualify for a loan to buy an average size apartment, which is what people mostly live in here. So they're just sitting on their cash and, you know, that just kind of drains away. So I had some exposure to the financial world. And one of my claims to fame is I started investing in the stock market back in January 2009. Market hit bottom in March. So, I've had some successes in that world. I've had some losses too. But I wanted to help people kind of get their money into something which was relatively safer than the stock market, less volatile. And I quickly settled on real estate in the U.S. because of the inherent stability, the inherent strength within the market. You know, crashes notwithstanding, the market typically cycles and just keeps going and goes up time over time. The cash flow is very nice. But it was something which is very challenging for people to get into with smaller sums of money, both in terms of access to it, knowing how to vet deals and where to put your money. And also, how are you going to do anything with $50,000 to $100,000? You know, maybe someone will take $50,000 or $100,000, but then you're all in one place. So I got this idea, really more from my stock market background, to help people diversify. So I created this company to help people invest checks as little as $10,000, provided it's part of a diversification plan, so that you can be involved in deals in multiple states, in multiple asset classes. And that was kind of the thesis.
There's so much there to unpack. I mean, so much there to unpack. So, I mean, you make it sound so simple. I started a company and then I got investors in and then we started buying, you know, or buying assets in a lot of different states. Okay, dandy. Like that gives us absolutely no clue whatsoever how you've done it. sorry to tell you that. But so you get these checks in from your investors. Like, how did you educate your investors? I mean, is everybody in your 10 minutes outside of Jerusalem, is everybody just going, hey, we want to invest in real estate in the U.S.? Do you have a network of people that, you know, you already knew that said, hey, we're looking to do that. We don't know how. How did you educate yourself? I've just got, you know, what were the mechanics on that?
Yeah, so I guess the starting place in this whole thing was the first person I spoke to about this. He's the guy who's my securities lawyer today. I called a friend of mine who's a lawyer. He wasn't a securities lawyer. He referred me to this other guy. His name is Sam Katz, a great securities lawyer. So we had a conversation. It must have been a year before I even printed my first OM or anything. And we spoke about securities law and all that fun stuff. And spent a lot of time kind of turning through it and figuring out what I would need to do in order to launch this thing. And then I needed to speak to an Israeli securities lawyer because I am based here in Israel. And I figured out those laws. And the first thing was just, it took a lot of time just to figure out the legalities and figure out how I could raise money. And then my story is pretty typical. I went out and my first deal I actually tried doing in Israel. So I went out and I spent a ton of money printing brochures and finding a deal and getting it all lined up. And then I raised no money. Mm. No one was interested. And so that was a couple thousand bucks spent on a good education. Spent many thousands more since then. So I learned from that experience that, first of all, the challenges of the Israeli real estate market, which we're trying to do in the very beginning, because that's where I am, but also a bit about how people are thinking, the kinds of questions I got from people, the feedback I got from people, which helped me repackage a little bit better going forward. I learned about the value very early on of partnering with the right people, of leveraging my connections and leveraging my network. So early on, we focused on working with partners. And I mean the asset managers and the sponsors, the GPs, guys who are actually working, finding deals, people who are willing to work with us at a very early stage. And they would allow us to bring smaller checks into their deals. In the very beginning, I was just throwing money from investors straight into deals. At that point, we had a $50,000 minimum, which is not so unheard of. And people were happy taking those checks. And we found people who had many years. The first deal we did, the sponsor is 25, 30 years experience in his field. He was focused on retail and office. And so once you approach people, and instead of me selling myself and my experience, which frankly, even now is pales in comparison to a lot of the people who are out there, I was selling my partner's experience and a partner's track record. And all of a sudden it was a different pitch. It was a different value proposition. And I was able to show them how it's not just people like you who are coming into this deal, but there are people who have been investing for decades with these people who invest millions of dollars at a shot investing with these people. This is where smart money is going. So all of a sudden, the people who are writing these smaller checks realized the value of what we were doing, and it made it easier to bring money into deals. So that was kind of that was an early shift and a big shift in how we operated that allowed us to start raising money. In terms of where we went to get the money, that's a great question. I started with my local, very locally, put up signs around my neighborhood, spoke to some people. It was a very hard challenge in the beginning, especially given where I live. And I don't live in a very affluent community, let's say. So it's not like I have a lot of neighbors who are all doctors and lawyers, who are guys who I hang out with every Sunday at softball. It's a different kind of community. So the way I started building out my investor base was heavy networking, going out there, showing people who I am, what I'm doing, who I'm working with. And I also became very active on LinkedIn. And at the beginning, when I first started, I couldn't imagine how just posting on social media could be an effective way to build a relationship, an effective way to connect with people and to build trust. But I saw people doing it and I saw people having success. So I said, I'm going to give it a shot. And I've learned over the years how it's actually an incredibly effective medium to do exactly that, to build those relationships, because you got to go in there on a regular basis and expose yourself and show who you are. And if you can do that on such a regular basis, that builds trust, because that shows how consistent you are. You're consistently raising for deals. You're consistently providing great value. You're consistently telling stories about your wins and your losses and your challenges. And that exposes you to people, and it doesn't build trust. I know I've bought from people that way. And that's been a big boost to my business, both in terms of connecting with older friends and older connections that I'm not necessarily in touch with on a regular basis because they're not near me, as well as building out new connections. So that's been a big boost to the business. And, we're still in that growth phase, still hacking away and trying to figure out how to grow. We thank God have grown well year over year. I wouldn't say I've gotten it down to a place where, some people go out, they send an email out and they get back, $10 million in the first 30 minutes. We're not there yet. But at least now I have a roadmap to get there.
Right, man. You bring up there's so many good nuggets in there, and I don't want to get too much into the weeds here because we're doing a great job of keeping this high level. But there are some questions I've had. So on the taxation and legalities side, when you set up, you were doing a direct to general partnership funding model, right?
The very very beginning, I dropped that right away.
Okay.
Because the first year I was operating, my goal was. My original mission statement was I wanted to help small investors invest the exact same way the large money invests.
Right.
I wanted them to be able to do all heavy fees or anything else. And what I learned doing that was I could work really, really hard to raise $1 million from 20, 30 people. And all I have to show for it is $20,000.
Right.
That's not a business model. It's not a business. You can't operate that way. So for that reason, for the legality reasons, one way we've handled a lot of legalities is we've gone into this fund model where basically every deal we do, we create an LLC. We like to incorporate in Wyoming, and all the money flows into that LLC, and that LLC invests as a single investor. This allows us to bring smaller money. Now I can take $10,000 checks because operators, they don't know what they're getting. I write them a check for $500,000 Right? I write them a check for $1 million. They don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
And they don't really care. As long as they know that I'm legit and that everyone's signing on, everyone's legal and I'm following all the rules. So then, and I can sign with them that we're all accredited or we're exempt from being accredited because we're not US residents or whatever it may be. We're able to, take our money, and that works. So pretty early on, we shifted to that model, and that's allowed us to do a lot more. It allows us to also pool our resources. You know, I can go to invest instead of it being lots of little checks. We present a much stronger case to the sponsors we're working with, and therefore able to work with a broader range of people, bring our investors a larger range of deals.
Right. So everything you guys are doing now is not a fund model in the traditional sense of it is a fund, an evergreen or a closed-end fund. You're doing a fund of funds model.
Right. Yeah. Recently, this whole world of equity raising is a very disparate world. Everyone kind of just gets into it and like they want to do it. And I recently came across that phrase fund to funds. I was like, what does that mean? Like, oh, that's what I'm doing. Right. Okay.
I had that happen too. Actually, I discovered the term January of last year and I'm like, wait, I've already done that. And they're like, oh, this new thing called fund to funds. I'm like, I kind of cooked it up, you know, oddly on my own. Of course, got some legal help along the way, but it was kind of funny when I'm like you, I learned that phrase as well. I'm like, oh, this actually works. Okay, this is other people are doing this. That's really cool. What's taxation like? And I mean, I asked this simply out of pure curiosity.
It's tricky because, I mean, taxation is a little bit easier than the securities law, because securities law I'm really responsible for.
That's saying something. I just want to pause there. You're saying taxation is easier than securities law.
It's easier for me because I don't have to deal with it directly. Okay, I can always farm it with somebody else. Meaning securities law, I have to make sure I get it right because I'm the one signing off on these operating agreements.
Right.
Taxes, I can give basic like direction, but ultimately I tell everybody, you know, you got to speak to your CPA, you got to speak to your accountant because I can't answer these questions. Like a high level, you know, it depends where the investor is and how they're investing. So Israel doesn't recognize 1031 exchanges, which means that you can't, you make capital gains on a deal in the US. Even if the US says we're not going to tax you on that, Israel will. So you kind of eliminates the capital gains. The 1031 exchange benefit. So there's an interesting opportunity there that I'm working on. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off yet. I guess we're also still waiting to see the dust settle on 1031 exchanges because that was raised recently as something that may be on the chopping block. So let's give it a little time before I invest too much energy. But there are interesting opportunities that creates to help people take advantage of 1031 exchanges legally who wouldn't otherwise have that opportunity.
You mentioned LinkedIn and doing a lot of marketing. How'd you call it? You said, you know, you got active on LinkedIn and found that doing social media marketing was an effective medium for generating interest in what you're doing. Have you had US-based or other country-based investors that want to invest with you? And were you able to pull that off?
Yes. I'd say right now, half my investor base is actually in the US.
Really?
Perhaps even more so. I have a lot of, because on LinkedIn, when I originally started, I wanted to go two routes. I wanted to do English marketing and Hebrew marketing because I am in Israel and most people here are Israeli. What I learned early on is it's hard enough to build out one proper marketing structure. To build it out twice is you're setting yourself up for failure. So right now I'm just focusing on the English side. So because of that, because most of my marketing is in English and a lot of the stuff I do is online right now. I mean, now the whole world's gone online, but even a few years ago, everything was in English. So I'm attracting people from different places. I've had people interested from the UK. It hasn't panned out. I almost had an investor from Australia. I got to meet an Australian security lawyer and discuss with him Australian securities law in that situation. That didn't pan out, but that was on the table at one point. I can't say I'm marketing other places right now, but the activity that I've been doing has been based mostly in the US and in Israel.
Right. And this is all just ignorance. Curious as to how some of these things work out because, you know, if you're not a state or out of country investor, you know, how does that play out? So it sounds like you've really developed just a good team that helps you get all the documents and legal stuff taken care of so that you can do what you do best.
Yeah, that's been a long time. It's taken a lot to build it out and to get it right. And then there are pitfalls along the way. And at one point I started taking certain legal documents and just tweaking them. I did that long enough that it deviated from the original structure way too far. So I had to bring my lawyer back in and he's like, what the heck, who did this? I'm like, let's not worry about who did this. Let's just get it right again. I guess once you figure it out, it's not that complicated. One of the trickier situations is dealing with non-US citizens because the tax law is built a lot around citizenship, especially because the US taxes based on citizenship. So dealing with U.S. citizens, whether they live abroad or in the U.S., it's roughly the same. Where it gets painful is when you're dealing with, I've had two pain points in this. First of all, dealing with non-U.S. citizens, they add to the filing requirements. So if you're dealing with $100,000 or $1 million investment, it's a small fee to pay. When you're dealing with $10,000 investments, all of a sudden, an extra $200 annually, it's a significant amount of money. So you have to figure that out. Does it make sense? Does it not make sense? Do you change your minimums? That already becomes business decisions. Another interesting place where it plays out is not really a pain point, but it does impact is withholding. Right? In the U.S., we're not used to withholding on real estate, but if you're not a U.S. citizen, then you have to withhold. So you have a deal which is paying out, 10% cash on cash. They're only going to see like 6.5% of that, roughly, over the course of the year. They have to file in order to get that back, and then they have a question of, well, do I invest $10,000 or $20,000 in a deal? If I have to start, I have to go get myself a TIN and I got an I-10 and I got to start filing. I do all that stuff. So I've started doing for some of these investors is offering a debt-based product whereby I act as the borrower, I act as the investor, and then they don't hold any assets in the US and it solves a lot of problems for them. Obviously, they're going to lose something on the upside, but it simplifies the entire process. So a lot of times it's just a matter of knowing the pieces and coming up with creative solutions to help people get in. And obviously, once you're managing debt, that's a whole nother, you got to keep track of your debt to income ratios and all that and make sure that it makes sense. And also, you can't structure it too heavily linked to the deal, because otherwise, then it becomes an equity investment. So you have to be very careful that you structure it in a way that those little nuances.
What about taxation back on the Israeli side?
It is what it is. It's not bad. It's 25% on capital gains,
okay.
Which may seem high, but it's actually for Israel, it's actually relatively low and it's scalable. So here when you start making about $5,000 a month in salary, your taxes go up to about 50%. So if you can earn money at 25%, it's a tough tax country.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the challenges here.
50% over at 60 grand a year.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Wow. Okay. Well, I won't complain much anymore.
There you go. Exactly. Look, this was founded as a socialist country. That has to be, can't be forgotten. It's been coming more and more capitalistic over the years, but taxes are still tough. And certain expenses we don't have, and certain things are cheaper. And for a lot of people, you can make it work, but it's really hard to build wealth at that point.
Right.
You make that in the U.S. It's doable to earn an extra 100 grand a year that you can then invest. And you do that for a number of years and you have something. Here, it's very hard to earn that overage.
Right. I want to hear about, and we're running out of time, but I want to hear about quickly, if you can tell us about how you selected and vetted your sponsorship or your sponsors that you decided to work with. I would imagine that would be a hard thing to do halfway around the world.
That's a great question. That's actually an area that it's one of the projects I have for later tonight. Is until now, what we've been doing is it's been based on personal connections. We've been small enough that we've had sufficient deal flow from a small, very tight network of people who we know. And when I say we, I have a partner who's 15 years in the field, and these are people he knows for a long time. And we had some very, very tight requirements on who we took as sponsors. You had to be recommended by somebody who's in real estate, who knows you through that connection. It can't just be a friend of yours from the community. It's got to be someone who knows the industry and knows you through the industry. We required someone to have 12, 13 years experience. They can go back to before the last crash, and they had to come with some very strong recommendations. We're kind of at a point where it's becoming restrictive, and we're realizing that we're really missing a lot of good opportunities out there. There are a lot of really good people who started the 8-9 years ago, and they have good experience and they're running good deals. And there are also people out there who don't know what they're doing. So we do need, so right now, we're working on right now, we have a document, we're calling it the DDQ for sponsors, which is a due diligence questionnaire that we're building out. We're in the middle of building out our full due diligence so that we can actually properly vet people, understand how they work. And based on that, qualify sponsors who we're going to work with. So instead of it being 12 years, if you have a certain number of years in the within a sector, if you've spent 5 years, but every year you're trying a different project, that doesn't speak well. But if you've been doing multifamily value add, 3, 4, 5 years, and you've done 15, 20 deals, and you have a track record, and we can speak to property managers who work with you, and we can see your reports you're putting out, and we see what you're doing, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, that's really brilliant. I love that. At some point we'll have to have you come back on and kind of break down your due diligence questionnaire and how you guys underwrite your general partnerships that you invest with, because that's I think that's something that is sorely missing here in this space. I'd love to hear more about that. David, let's jump into the final four if we can. The four questions are as follows. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
A passive or active?
Active.
Make yourself a value. Go find a deal. Find somebody who can help you run this thing. Give him a big chunk of the profits and learn by doing it alongside him.
I love that. Number two is, when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
Right now, I'm doing a ton to stay on top of my game. At this moment, I'm spending probably over $30,000 a year on coaching in different areas. Mm. And that includes business, because I'm not just building out a little operation here. I'm trying to build out a business. That includes sales, and that includes actually equity raising. So I'm definitely funneling a lot of our money into growing this thing.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you are doing to make the world a better place?
I like to think that my core business mission is doing that. The ability to kind of level the playing field and you know, the same thing that online brokerages did for stock trading 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I like to see myself as part of this movement of people who are kind of democratizing real estate investing, kind of normalizing real estate investing, which will allow so many more people to, you know, take part in this.
Right. No, absolutely. Yeah. It seems like a space that many want to play in, but don't necessarily know how. So good for you for making that happen. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
So I'm on LinkedIn, David Preil. That's DOVIDPREIL. Check out my website. That's YDLPinvestments.com. And that's probably the best ways to reach me.
Awesome. David, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it. I learned a lot. It was great having you on.
All right, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.